Thank you so much. That was Rosemarie and Maggie. And I don't know about you, but I could just feel that warm breeze rolling right off the stage. Good morning, everyone. I'm Rachel Long, and I'm currently the president of Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. We aspire to be an open-hearted and an open-minded congregation, and we welcome you, whatever your ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, or family structure. We welcome you no matter your age, your abilities, or your inabilities. Toward the end of the service, guests and visitors will have an opportunity to introduce yourselves, and we hope by that time you'll feel comfortable enough to tell us who you are and what brought you here. On Sunday mornings, we have a wide variety of services, sometimes presented by our minister, Ralph Tuksinski, sometimes by a member of our own congregation, and sometimes someone from the wider community. And today we do have one of our own members presenting today, Andy Summers, and we'll be introducing him a little bit later. Our opening words today are number 419 in your hymnal, and that's towards the second half. And I would like us to read this together. Look to this day, for it is life, the very life of life. In its brief course lie all the verities and realities of your existence, the bliss of growth, the glory of action, the thunder of beauty. For yesterday is but a dream, and tomorrow is only a vision. But today, well lived, makes every yesterday a dream of happiness, and every tomorrow a vision of hope. Look well, therefore, to this day. Our first hymn today is hymn number 1. May nothing evil cross this door, with our accompanist Delita Chaprou, and please stand. Our chalice lighting words will be read today by Christina Clock, and that will be followed by a moment of silent reflection.
It's my pleasure to read Solstice by Diane Lee Mumy. And did the earth shift? Again did the nights grow short and the days long. And the people of the earth were glad and celebrated each in their own ways.
As a caring community, we now have a time to briefly share any joys, sorrows, or concerns with our prairie community.
Rose? We had a wonderful 9 days away attending our friend's 50th wedding anniversary. Met an old colleague of mine in Lexington. Galen did botanizing. We ended up Kentucky, Lexington, Kentucky, right. And Galen did found his plant that he had described, this new species growing in Lebanon, Tennessee, around in that area. Oh, and we ended up in Springfield doing Lincoln things, but we did have a very sad thing happen. Our daughter called yesterday morning crying our favorite grand cat, Sam, the talking cat, passed away. Very sad.
I just quickly want to add that we went to a service, a Father's Day service at the Lexington Unitarian Universalist Church, and it was lovely. Everybody was very friendly. And I passed out several of those little cards, that, you know, the little greeting cards and the wallet cards for Prairie, mm-hmm. telling about Prairie. Almost everybody knew about the first church. Nobody knew about us, so a few more people now.
They do now. And Rose, Nancy and Rosemary.
Well, I've got several, and some of them are really big, so I'll try to be somewhat brief. I had a sorrow in that my favorite aunt, Keen, died at 94. She was also my dad's favorite sister. She was the sort of woman that could understand you without you saying anything, or hardly anything. I moved after 21 years from a one-bedroom with avocado everything. And I'm in a much better place, and I couldn't have made this move after 21 years being a pack rat without especially Barb Park's extreme help and ruthlessness in throwing out papers and also washing everything that could be washed. And also Randy and Kathy Converse and another woman from work really helped, and I hosted Circle Dinner yesterday in space that actually people could fit into comfortably, so that was very nice. My dad's health problems are continuing to be worse. He had a fall in mid-April, and he hit his head hard and had a arachnoid hemorrhage, and so he thinks he's going to retire in November, and it's 20 years ago. His memory and his thinking is pretty messed up right now, so hopefully that'll alleviate over time.
Hi, I just want to briefly say it's been such a joy playing music with Maggie. I'm always looking for somebody I can jam with where I don't have to read notes and stuff. And I'm very sad that she's not staying here forever and ever. So thank you, Maggie.
It is also my joy, and thank you. I have a big sorrow today because some very old friends of mine, their son, who's about the same age as my son, was murdered. And it's really sad.
I'm so glad the water stopped coming up in my basement.
This really takes me back to my childhood. I excelled in show and tell. It was my favorite subject in school. And After 2.5 years, the new edition of the medical terminology book that I do with my mom came out, and it's a little anticlimactic because it just arrives at your doorstep one day, and you think, oh, there it is. And then you think, oh, my gosh, after 2.5 years, it must be done because I'm holding it. So that's a really good feeling. And it's probably maybe 1.5 to 2 years before we start on the next edition, so I get a little break.
I've noted that people in Madison feel that if you can't get to Madison, your life is pretty well over. But now we can. I-39 is open, and so we can go both ways, and we're living.
Today, oddly enough, getting out of Madison was equally difficult.
Well, Dan and I had a joy yesterday, and Mechie and Delita were also there. The first Mad Celt Fest, which is a Madison Celtic Festival. There were wonderful Irish dancers, but I didn't see Emma there. But I think it was her group that was there. There were and there were teenage bands, and there were sheepdog demonstrations, and people with guys with armor, and dancers and singers, and it was a great success. Some people had worked all for a really long time to put this on, and so next year there will be one. They're hoping for a 2-day festival the last weekend in June, so you can plan ahead for that.
That's great. You get everybody?
I guess I'll just take this opportunity, since Rebecca just walked in, can you stand up and wave? That Rebecca and her husband, John, are going to be having a first birthday party after service today for their son, Indy. And there'll be food, and it'll be right out on our lawn. So that's certainly a joy for all of us who know Indy. So I get the honor today of briefly introducing Andy Summers, who is known to many of us. He's one of our own more colorful members, trumpet player, judge. I could definitely go on, and many of you know some of his many, many facets of his life. He is presenting today on sex, religion, politics, and the law. Please join me in welcoming Andy.
First of all, we have a couple disclaimers. Any of you who plan to run for political office are free to leave now. I don't want to get you in trouble. I feel honored, you know, to get up here. It's great. You know, I'm following people who, scientists, poets, Nobel Prize winner. I'm a little intimidated, too, by that. But before allowing intimidation to get me, I remember in 1960, Richard Nixon appointed a man named G. Harold Carswell to the United States Supreme Court. He wasn't confirmed, but one of the things that came out against him was that he was kind of mediocre. Now, there were two senators who stood up. God, what strength. Huska and Long got up and said, mediocre people need representation too. I thought that was wonderful, especially since he was talking to a group of pretty mediocre people. I put the word sex into this topic because I knew it was going to be a nice summer day and nobody would show up. And as soon as you add sex, everybody shows up. And you people are so easy, you know. My wife made me promise not to be humorous, so I won't be humorous. And she made me promise not to tell about myself. She says, it's not all about yourself. So I'll tell about her. For the most part, my introduction, or her introduction, to sex was through fear. You know, the priests, the nuns, first of all, we didn't use the word. We never heard the word. not even for gender. I mean, it'd be male, female. You never heard the word sex. And if it did slip out, it would only be in regard to procreation, not recreation. I mean, nobody would even think of that. But I like the fact that the priest would tell us that sex is wonderful. It's a gift from God. God gave this to me directly. Just don't use it. But, you know, sex is a basic instinct. I don't know whether it's our country. I haven't made a study of all the countries. I know Ireland was one of the most repressive countries. And a lot of it had to do with the Catholic Church. And I won't get into churches. But my upbringing had to do a lot with the Catholic Church. And they were constantly battling with sex. I don't know what the problem was, whether they were afraid somebody else was having sex or somebody was having fun. I'm not sure what it was. But the whole idea of sex was power. Power over the people. The people should not be thinking about fun here. Everything should be working our way to heaven. Everything here was purgatory. We're on our way to heaven, and we shouldn't get sidetracked on the way. And therefore, so, I don't know whether it's Karl Marx called that pie in the sky, but we thought about pie in the sky, because that's constantly what we are told. I started off in this talk, the early concept sounded vast, and I thought to Mary Mullen, maybe I should make 3 or 4 talks. And then I started working on it, and they said, oh my gosh, I really got to have nothing to say, you know. So I called her up, and I said, maybe we should make it 1. And then I found in my wisdom that the less I know about a topic, the more I can talk. And so I will try, maybe we'll have to go 2. We'll have to see how the first one is accepted. We were told that when I was young, when Mary was young, the concept that we were talked about was abstinence. Abstinence, abstinence, abstinence. And the strange thing is, here we are now in 2008, and this concept of abstinence is still being preached. That's being preached by our politicians, not just the priests. Abstinence is hooked into our foreign aid. You know, we'll give certain things, but don't talk about contraceptives. Don't talk about birth control, because these people shouldn't be having sex anyway, you know. For some reason, the Bush administration, although they've been criticized by the surgeon generals, have not caught the concept that abstinence doesn't work. I mean, we run into strange things. If you run into a situation like in Gloucester, Massachusetts, you have all these girls trying to get pregnant because they all want to get pregnant. You know, I don't know what the gimmick or thought or, you know, it's just an idea. So the idea of abstinence isn't catching on. I don't know. The whole idea, you know, throughout our history, there have been a few individuals who have made a difference, who stood up and talked, and then there have been people who tried to sit on us and keep us down. Sometimes I find through humor, we do more to contradict the naysayers than all the other things. If you try to be rational in the face of irrationality, you can't. But you can be humorous. And so I give some pride to unlikely people like Mae West, who I think was hilarious. Mae West grew up in the early 1900s, and when she was on 5 or 10, she was on the vaudeville stage. They were calling her Baby Vamp. You know, she got older. She never did anything about sex. She never was sexual. but she talked in a way that everybody thought of sex as soon as she said anything. I mean, she was hilarious with her innuendos, you know. And she inspired a lot of hatred and a lot of fear and a lot of people coming to get rid of her, you know. I mean, she would say things like, I speak two languages, body and English. I like that one. I used to be Snow White, but I drifted. I try anything once, twice if I like it, three times to make sure. All these sayings, she did not come out and actually say anything. And yet, she scared people. She scared people. Now, one of the people who became frightened back then, and I don't know if he became frightened of Mae West, but he was frightened of people like Mae West, was a man named Comstock, Anthony Comstock. I don't know, has anybody heard the name of Anthony? Anyway, he was old enough, so he served in the infantry in the Civil War. Now, I read through his bibliography, and that seems like that was the only thing he did. You know, I don't see him getting any other degrees. All of a sudden, he makes himself the head of the New York Society for the Suppression of Vice. Now, that sounds great. Boy, that sounds like a great title. There was a reason, you know, and a lot of these people, there's a reason for it. And because they don't start off without a reason. Now, New York was in pretty bad shape. And he wanted to clean up New York City. So he came out with something called the Comstock Law, which was accepted in Washington, D.C., And after a while, states started accepting it, and it prohibited the sale, possession, transfer of obscene articles. It didn't tell you exactly what obscene was, except one obscene article they told you was contraceptives. And, you know, the battle went on. There was a line in Inherit the Wind I thought was kind of good at the end when the science teacher says to Henry Drummond, who was the attorney, he said, well, thank God it's over. And Drummond says, it's not over. It's just beginning. And the battle has begun throughout the years. We've never really won any battles. They keep on going. And the contraceptive thing, in one form or another, is still going. We had a pharmacist somewhere around here who wouldn't fill a prescription for contraception because it was against his religion. Well, I'm glad I just didn't go in there and ask him for some kind of life-saving pill and he decided, I'll be right there. I'm glad I didn't need a life-saving drug from this guy because he might decide for whatever that I wasn't worthy or I shouldn't have it. But you see, the battle keeps going on. Whether we talk about abortion, people are making abortion a political issue. They're making gay marriage a political issue. These aren't political issues. These are personal issues between people who make decisions. And yet our politicians have used them for their own purposes. We use gay marriage amendment in order to get the vote out and in order to get people to vote for the death penalty, which I thought that was hilarious, you know. You could kill people, but you couldn't let them marry. But that was one of the reasons to get the vote out, to put that on the ballot and to make it a political thing. Comstock's laws kept going until as late as 1960. At that time, there were 30 states where contraception was considered lewd, immoral, and promiscuous. And it took people, you know, it takes people all along. I said before, it takes humor to make fun of these people, to show us, the rest of the people, how ridiculous they're going to be, or they are. But it also takes tough people. There was William and Margaret Sanger, who in New York City led the fight for contraception, to open up clinics, birth control clinics, and they went to jail. Not long, but they went to jail for their thinking. Mae West also went to jail because she wrote a play about homosexuality. I mean, this shows you how crazy the laws could be and how crazy the people could be to let this happen. The Sanger's fight went all the way to the Supreme Court on a couple of occasions. And last was around 1936, where the doctors were seeking approval. The doctors were prohibited from sending contraceptives across state lines. I don't know what would happen if you took it across state lines. As I said, the whole idea about capturing us came early. I mean, the fear. When I or Mary was a young person, one of the things that I had to do, and I think this is hilarious, I think back, and I was 10 years old or something, I had to take the pledge for decency. I had to stand up in church and pledge. Here's what I had to pledge. I wish to join the Legion of Decency, which condemns vile and unwholesome moving pictures. I unite with all who protest against them as a grave menace to youth, to home life, to country, and religion. Considering these evils, I hereby promise to remain away from all motion pictures, except those which do not offend decency and Christian moral. I was 8 years old, for God's sake. You know, what the hell? I didn't know what they're talking about. Pretty quick, we learned to get the list. You know, I look back at how crazy life was. Some of the movies. Now, I haven't seen some of these movies. I still haven't seen them. But I understand why some of them were considered a little risque, but some I never heard of before. For instance, well, this one I've heard of, 1964, From Russia with Love. That was a James Bond movie, you know. What in the world was that? 1965, The Pawnbroker. You know, well, why would I saw The Pawnbroker. I can't. Rosemary's Baby. I mean, we've all seen Rosemary's Baby. I mean, except she threw up, you know. That's enough to, you know, make it obscene. But I'm Curious Yellow. I wasn't allowed to see that one. And Last Tango in Paris. I snuck in to see that one. This one I could not quite understand. Grease and Dawn of the Dead. And the one I could never see, the only thing I could see was the ads, and that was The Outlaw. I could never see that one. But that gives you just an example of some of the films that were looked upon as a threat to our family life. The other thing at that time that came about was the production code of the motion picture industry. And they would give ratings. They still give some kind of ratings to the movies to let us know that these are dangerous movies. Now, I remember back 1926 or something like that, they were asking Al Smith about banning books. And he came out with a lovely comment. He said, I never knew anyone who was seduced by a book. But we did ban books back then, and there were authors, writers, who were out there writing in contradiction and without fear of any ban. I mean, James Joyce didn't care about anything, but he never came over here. But his book never came over here for a long time either, which is hilarious, because even to this day, most people don't understand it. But it had dirty words in it. There was a man named Henry Miller who broke ground, and a company named Grove Press. And they didn't seem to care. They went to battle, and they fought against all these codes and all these. But without these people, without Margaret Sanger and Mae West and Henry Miller, James Joyce, maybe we'd get to where we are today. But they chipped away at some of these people who knew better and knew what's good for us. And we're constantly faced with this. You know, as far as religion, organized religion is always on the watch against anything sexual. It really offends them. There are issues today that we should be spending time on, either as individuals or in religions. We should be thinking about contraception. We should be thinking about abortion. We should be thinking about bans against homosexual, death with dignity, allowing people to marry for whatever reason. Yet the headlines, and the press does this too, the press plays right into it because they understand what sells. We'll spend more time learning what somebody named Brittany is doing. I have no idea who she is. But we spend our time worrying about her. And we worry about these teenagers in Gloucester, Massachusetts. We worry about the Bill Clinton thing drove the press is crazy. They went wild over that. You know, we were at war back and forth. We were killing people, and Clinton was sending jets out. They said that he was like the tail that was wagging the dog. He was trying to get pressure off. But there was still war, and we were fighting people, but nobody cared. You know, today we have our newspapers spend more time talking about these silly little issues than they do about the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, poverty, all the things that really should be bothering you. And one I'm sure Galen's going to like to hear. Nobody writes anything, there's Galen there, about overpopulation. Nobody writes anything about the greatest threat to our planet, which is overpopulation. That is an item which is just about as fearful as the word sex. When we go to the politicians, I think they have always been a little hilarious in the sense that they've been targets. How much time you let me? All right. Now, I wasn't around for Andrew Jackson, but I understand he had a little problem with not marrying Rachel early enough, and people made a big thing out of it. And then there was William Harding. Harding, for God's sake. They had apparently had an illegitimate child, and there was a sing-song slogan about, ha, ha, where's your pa, gone to the White House, ha, ha, ha. I mean, Harding, who cares, you know. We got a little older, and we covered up a lot of our sexual activities, our politicians. We never heard about Roosevelt. We never heard about Kennedy. Later on, things, and I think Bill Clinton kind of broke the mold, you know. We now hear a lot about sex, and we hear a lot about our politicians. And it's kind of nice to know that our politicians are human, but I don't think we should spend that much time. We saw big pictures for days on Elliot Spritzer. Most people didn't even know who he was, but we had pictures of him in some scandal, the governor of New York. He stepped down, and the funny thing is the new governor gets up and immediately starts announcing all the affairs he had. And the one thing I thought was shocking, not the affairs, I thought was shocking is he had him in the Days Inn. I think that one, just on the basis of taste, you know. But then we had people, these politicians are always talking about family values. I don't know what family values are. But right after a sexual scandal, have you ever noticed they're always standing up there with a whole bunch of family? I mean, I think some of them have to rent the family. But if anything, we've done a good because we've sent these guys back to their family. And they always send, "I'm resigning now to spend more time with my family," you know. Hey, that's wonderful. And the man who hated homosexuals from Idaho, he was hilarious. He kept spending for weeks and weeks explaining how he got this toilet paper stuck to his foot and had his foot going all the way under. And, of course, one minute he's quitting and the next minute he's not. And then there's the family again. I said, "Yeah, it's wonderful bringing all these friends." And the other fellow I thought was good. Was this fellow really knew about family values, a name Representative Fosella from Staten Island. Again, nobody here has ever heard of Staten Island. Nobody here has ever heard of Representative Fosella. He had such family values, he had two families. And I'm not sure when he went back to his family, which one he picked. You know, it's kind of like going to heaven after being married three times. You know, who do you meet up there? But it kind of gives you... Now, as I said, what we can do, what do we learn from this? We can learn to confront fear. We can learn that there is nothing that we have to worry about. Now, we're not going to go to jail like Margaret Sanger. We're not going to go to jail like Mae West. Henry Miller, I don't know if they ever got him in jail, but I know they went over after Grove Press. We don't have to be that startling. We can fight. We can fight a little bit to make a difference in attitudes and changing attitudes and talking about what's important. Now, I'm going to talk to you about things that you're doing already, so it's kind of like preaching to the choir. Now, on the big issues, we can start calling and writing letters to the editor. My favorite newspaper, the Capital Times, is no longer there, but I used to laugh about the Capital Times because they would put their editorials on the front page. But at least you could get to them with some kind of liberal message. I don't know if you can with a state journal. But one of the things I'd like somebody to ask, and I may just do it next week because I'm telling you to do it, who are the members of the board of directors for the Wisconsin Manufacturers Association? We keep hearing about them. They keep affecting our Supreme Court races. And they seem to have all the money in the world. Who's a member of these? You know, why do we kind of boycott some of these corporations and let them know why? We don't want lobbyists like you to come in and tell us who our Supreme Court judges should be. We don't want this kind of effect. This is something, I mean, it has nothing to do really with sex, but it is our way of striking back. As you know, Dylan Thomas said, "Do not go gentle into that good night. Find some kind of a battle, even the small ones." We've come a long way in the idea of struggling against the shame of sex. It's still out there. And we still have preachers who are preaching the shame of sex. We had Pat Robinson and we had Jerry Falwell, who were telling that the reason cities were deluged or swamped or terrible disasters had is because we supported homosexuality. I don't know why they're not, these people who are still with us are not still talking about the terrible floods we had, mainly because they happened in states that never supported homosexuality. In fact, they opposed it. So bad things can happen to good people. I think our job then, and you people do it, Unitarians have never been afraid to speak out. But we should not fear speaking out, because that's the magic power that they have over our heads, fear. If you say anything, who was the fellow that, the Attorney General, he ran for the Senate and he was beaten by a dead man. Yeah, he got beaten by a dead man. I thought that was hilarious. So we made him attorney. Bush made him Attorney General. One of the things he did. This is how crazy. But they don't see this as crazy, you see. One of the things he went around the Department of Justice hanging cloaks around the statues that might have been showing bosoms, you know. I mean, this shows a mentality. It's still there. We have this FCC. Oh, you know, I knew I'd hurt him by talking about this stuff. The FCC got more excited about Janet Jackson showing a boob than the war or anything else. You can't say a dirty word on the main, whatever they think are dirty words, you can't say them. You have to go to cable to hear these words, you know. And George Carlin is another one. God bless George Carlin. He got up and taught us about these words that you couldn't say. And, you know, he said them. I'll tell you. And, of course, he got thrown out of a lot of cities. But he was not afraid to get up and take on the giants. So we've always been able to find Davids to attack Goliath. And the Davids go back to Mae West, Margaret Sanger, Henry Miller, James Joyce, right down the line. People who were not afraid for their own purposes. I don't think they went out saying, I'm going to attack censorship. I could see Joyce really caring. Mae West would write another play, and she would have some great saying to come out. One of the things she came out and said, I'd rather be looked over than overlooked. I think maybe that's the theme we should take. We would rather be looked over and listened to than overlooked. So I'm not going to allow you to ask me any questions. I think it'd be better if you had questions about sex, if you would get up and give personal talks about your own experience. Yeah. All right. Thank you. I guess I have to stand here. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if this is exactly the comment that maybe you want to hear, but I just wanted to say that Summertime, the song that was sung, is one of my favorite songs. But I think the lyrics should be changed to Your Mama's Rich and Your Daddy's Good Looking.
Yeah. Or in some cases, Your Mama's Rich and She's Good Looking. We won't say anything about the daddy.
I just wanted to make a comment in terms of what you were saying about the threat of homosexuality to family values. One of Alan's first cousins at 70, he's saying yesterday, he called up, he says, well, I'm 77 now. And as we were chatting, one of the things that he was talking about was he had talked with the cousin who's arranging for the next family reunion. Now, this is the side of the family of one of Alan's, two of Alan's uncles, who are quite conservative fundamentalists. And Alfred's dilemma is that the next family reunion is going to be in Santa Fe, but the last one where his partner went, who was once a Baptist minister that he ran off with, the family was not terribly welcoming to Frank. And so their concern is he's hoping that the rest of the family will be welcoming to Frank when they come to Santa Fe. And I thought, what an irony. You're trying to have a family reunion, and part of the family feels threatened to even be there. And but he did say that some of the younger generation are beginning to be a little bit more open, but, you know, he's always appreciated Alan's branch of the family because he continued to have family during some pretty difficult times. But I said, yeah, that, you know, your relationship is such a threat to our marriage.
You know, I may say that we have come a long way. You know, when I was a boy in my neighborhood in Brooklyn, a mixed marriage was if you married a non-Irish girl. We've come a long way. Anyway, yeah.
You asked the question a little earlier, what can we learn from this? And I think one very important thing that some of us still have to learn is beware of the arbiters of morality and the tremendous hypocrisy that you can find in the relationship between politics and sex. And I just want to remind you, the Spitzer guy was or set himself up as the arbiter of morality. Oh, yeah. And that's what made the whole thing so nasty. And the other one, my favorite example, because I think he's so disgusting, is J. Edgar Hoover. Oh, yeah. And that is still a sacred cow, not talked about very much, but what we know about him now is a prime example for the incredible hypocrisy of the far right wing bozos. So I can't think of another word right now. Oh, by the way, would you like another quote by what's her name?
Mae West.
She said at one point, supposedly, "Oh, is that a gun in your pocket, or are you just glad to see me?"
Yeah, right. You know, you shouldn't make fun of J. Edgar Hoover. He would say nice things about your dress.
Well, I can relate to Eileen's family reunion. I won't go into the details, but Paul and Stephen showed up at our family reunion with the conservative side in the family. That was rather interesting. I also took my interracial son into Wyoming when they still had animiscegenation laws. But I want to get to something humorous. When I was a child, I went to see Gone with the Wind with my parents. And it can get really embarrassing if parents don't level with you about what's going on. As an adult, I got to talking. I hadn't seen Gone with the Wind since then. And I got to talking to someone about the scene where the woman had her appendix taken out. No, it's when she had a baby.
One of the reasons we chose summertime, other than the obvious fact of it being summer, is because you are summer.
I wonder why Dolita picked me. Nothing evil past this.
Good morning. Normally when I get up and stand in a crowd like this, I'm saying my name is Pat and I'm an alcoholic, but this is the wrong meeting. So I'm visiting from the First Church in Dallas, and it's a great pleasure to be here. 1963 or 64, there was a speaker, a gentleman by the name of Bill Baird, that gave away a condom to an unmarried woman and was 3 months in the Boston jail. Bill Baird got me to this faith. I brought him as a speaker in 2001. I was working in the Choice community in Dallas and still am, and brought him as a speaker to First Church and heard part of the sermon from Dr. Hallman, Laurel Hallman, and was smitten. I would say, you know, I said all those Episcopal roots went out the window. I got away from that. It's a great pleasure to be here. Thank you.
One thing, if I may just finish before Galen, one thing I didn't touch on is all the crazy laws we had against mixed marriages. And it goes back, I don't know, 50 years or something, to a couple named Loving who got married and went to the, you know, Virginia, the state for lovers, and they got raided and arrested, and they tried to tell the police they were married, and they were told, not in this state, you're not. And they were taken out, and part of the punishment was that they were banned from Virginia for, I don't know, for 20 years or something like that. They now can go back. But, you know, these states started passing laws which said, if a marriage is illegal in the state you come from, it's illegal here. Massachusetts has got... Nobody paid any attention to them. Civil rights came. Now they're using them to stop gay people coming from another state and going, like, to Massachusetts and getting married. So these laws are still on the books, and they're still going after the sexual attitudes. And nobody's been able to stand up and say, stop. And that, I guess that's where we have to. But anyway.
The abortion law is still on the books in Wisconsin.
Uh-huh.
And if Roe versus Wade falls, it's right there in place.
Okay, yeah. And of course, we went through a constitutional amendment against the sanctity of marriage, whatever that means.
Right.
It means you can't get divorced. Galen, you had a...
Just briefly, in the early 1990s, with Peace Corps volunteers in Paraguay, and you weren't allowed to talk about birth control to any Paraguayans. You could respond if they brought it up. You also weren't allowed to give out any condoms, but you were allowed to have as many condoms as you want or need for yourself. And so, therefore, volunteers would get all big bunches of condoms and give them to all the villagers and everything, and they never questioned it.
When we were at the Unitarian Church in Knoxville, Tennessee, I met Ray Davis. I think his first name was Ray. Dr. Davis, a retired biologist who was a good friend of Hugh Iltis. Most of you old timers here know Hugh. Unfortunately, Hugh has refused to come to our meetings because somebody very upset when he complained about. They didn't listen to him when he was talking about overpopulation. Anywho, Ray Davis said he remembers when Hugh, back in about 1969 or so, went to a meeting. I think it was a, I don't know. Anyway, he was protesting the anti-contraception law here in Wisconsin, and he held up a piece of hardware that he bought at the local store, which was a little spiral metal thing, and it looked very much like an IUD, and that was a huge scandal. Anyway, Hugh Iltis was one of those Davids out there fighting the Goliaths. And he's really one of my heroes, even though he's a very rough guy in many other ways. I also want to remind you that overpopulation is kind of a gradual thing. It sneaks up on you. And if you read the news and listen to it, almost every day there's news that's, that shows how critical it is. And one of the news pieces recently was about job growth versus unemployment. And the unemployment in this country is gradually increasing, as you all know. There's a real crisis. And one of the main reasons is that even though the new jobs are being added in our economy, the population growth exceeds the number of new jobs that are being created a little bit each year. And year by year by year, it becomes a real crisis.
Can I finish up with something? Mary got after me, and she said, why are you talking about this? You don't know anything about it. And I said, that's true. But let Reverend Ralph might enjoy this. There was a preacher who spent all week on his sermon, and he was going to talk about sex. But he was embarrassed about the word and about the topic. So his wife, she was low church and didn't go to services, she asked him, what are you going to talk about? And he said, water skiing. And she said, oh, okay. And so he went to church and gave his sermon. And he came out, and all the people had big smiles, and they were so happy. And one woman came up to the preacher's wife, who was working in the garden, and said, what a wonderful sermon your husband gave. And the wife says, that's interesting. I didn't think he knew anything about it. He only tried it one time, and he fell off. I think this is...
I hate to follow that, but actually tying in a little bit with something Andy did say, and Galen as well, I'm confused by the lack of transparency in the immorality of denying contraception to people in countries where AIDS and other diseases are rampant, and overpopulation is at the core of the starvation and food crises that they have. Granted, there are other problems, but it just doesn't seem, it seems one of the greatest immoralities of all is to deny contraception to these people.
Yeah.
I'm confused.
Oh, I just had a little different tack here. I'm definitely in favor of freedom of speech and freedom of the press. But there's a place where sometimes businesses are using sex to sell things. There was something in London, apparently people were complaining that there's a big billboard for some place that offers table dancing or something like that, and it's somewhat explicit billboard that's out there. And so is there anything, you know, for those of us who have children or grandchildren, it might be is there a legitimate concern about how trashy some things are that are just in poor taste that are in the public arena, and that they're really not there to make a point, but to sell something. And networks like Fox can have all the moralists on there, yeah. And then they can have some show that seems to want to attract people with scantily clad women, mm-hmm. or whatever it is. So
we still have the boycott.
It's always that issue.
We still have the boycott. We don't have to buy those things, and we can tell them why. But I'll tell you the one other thing. We talk about some of the problems with politicians and sex. There are good problems, too. You know, Barack Obama would not have been in the Senate, and he would not have been the Democratic nominee had it not been for some congressman or senator named Ryan, who got into a little fight with his wife, and it came out that he was involved with sexual activity. And he was defeated, and an unknown named Barack Obama was elected to the Senate. So... it does. Sometimes, well, those family values, sometimes they blow up in your face when you're talking about family values and you try to take your wife to a swingers club. But the anyway, was there another?
I just wanted to say that a very good article on overpopulation has been written by one of our own members, John France, and the article is on the back wall, and I hope that the readership of the magazine where it was published is great. I'm afraid it probably isn't, not quite as many people, but they ought to be reading The Humanist.
Free inquiry. So, thank you.
There were so many pieces we could have discussed here. Prairie runs on love, but we also need your monetary support, and it's now time for the offertory. Please hand your baskets to the ushers who will be walking down the aisles, and our offertory will be again performed by Maggie and Rose Marie.
And now the purple dust of twilight comes, steals across the meadows in my heart. High up in the sky, the little stars climb, always reminding me that we're apart. You wander down the lane and far away, leaving me a song that will not die. Love is just the stardust of yesterday, a memory of the years gone by. Sometimes I our love was new, and each kiss an inspiration. But that was long ago. Now I live my consolation in the stardust that falls beside the garden wall. Stars are the night you kiss me a paradise where roses bloom. And though I dream in vain, in my heart there always will remain a stardust melody, a melody of your voice.
Sorry, she was going to get me over by way of
here we
G
go.
And do this. Let's try this again. I'll just start.
Thank you.
We now have a time for guests and visitors to introduce yourselves. If you'd be willing to just let us know who you are and what brought you here today, we'd appreciate getting to know a little bit about you. And Mary has the microphone, if you could raise your hand.
Good morning. I'm Pat Tharp, and I'm from the First Unitarian Church in Dallas, Texas. And I'm here for a marvelous occasion. I have a niece who, for 25 years, has been with this fella, and finally they got married. So I walked her down the aisle because everybody else was dead, you know. Her mother and daddy and all that, so it was up to me. But it was a great pleasure, and I know I've heard so much about Madison. It was my first opportunity to visit, and it's what a great city, and I plan to come back. And what a great service. I thought about going downtown. I belong to a large church. In fact, Dr. Hallman is running for president of UUA. And I don't know. She's trying to cover every church in the country. She may be here sooner or later. I thought this is where I'm really more comfortable, and I like it. And thanks for welcoming.
Thanks for coming.
Hi, my name is Lee Haspel, and I'm here for the second time. Mm-hmm. And why the second time? Because I liked it so much the first time. And I'm very happy to introduce my daughter, Gina, and my son-in-law, Brent, and we have a little guy downstairs by the name of Mickey.
And wife.
Pardon me?
And a wife.
My wife?
Well, I was here.
Well, we're... together.
Good morning. My name is Moses Prasad. I'm from Madison, and I'm here because Raju and Becky invited me, and I didn't plan on being quite so late. I drove around, missed the church like three times, and then I finally noticed. I'm like, oh, okay, it's right here. But I'm glad to be here.
Thanks for coming. I would call your attention to the announcements in your order of service, and that includes the calendar on the back page. And are there any other announcements that did not make it to the order of service?
I'm sorry, this isn't an announcement. I missed joys and concerns. I just wanted to say what a joy it was to have such a large turnout at our open house for Toby's graduation last Sunday. It was wonderful, plus the cards, plus the phone calls, and it really meant a lot to Toby. Thank you. I do have one announcement. We're planning an orientation to Prairie on a Saturday in July. If anyone is interested, please talk to me. Thanks.
For anyone that has ever eaten food from a farm, who has ever lived through the 60s, who has ever been different, and above all, think of the CSAs and dealing with the problems of the weather right now and the flooding. If you're one of those people, come on Thursday night to see the real dirt about Farmer John starting at 7 o'clock.
Besides love and money, Prairie runs on volunteer work, and there are several opportunities to, in the next few weeks, to make coffee, greet visitors, and help with our chief cup washer. And so I've got that sign-up sheet if anyone is ready for that. Thank you.
Hi. I also forgot something, and I'm so glad Paula did come up with something because it made me think of the two plates that Lily Sandler gave me after Betty Jellings' memorial service. She lives out of town, as do most of the family. And she said, "Rosemary, I'm sure these belong to someone at Prairie who brought cookies." Mm-hmm. And she sort of said, "Will you take them?" and threw them at me because they were cleaning up and trying to get out of there. So I have a very plain white plastic sort of Melmac plate. Oh, okay. And then I have a rather delicate, smaller one that's kind of curled up at the edges. It's white on the inside and kind of a blue on the outside. So if anybody recognizes, Barb says she belongs to one of them. If anyone recognizes them, I don't want to keep them till the next Jellings dies.
One way in the back. Go ahead.
Just a real quick for people who have computer abilities. Another group that I'm associated with that talks about UU activities reminded me that there's a number of streaming video type things from the GA presentation that'll be available via the GA site.
GA is General Assembly. That's our yearly UU meeting.
Because of the flooding, a lot of the blood drives in that Dubuque area were canceled. And I gave blood this week, and they really need blood. So anyone who is available and can and allowed to give blood, I know they're very selective, but please to try.
I just want to say I enjoyed that Stardust so much. I was hoping people would start to dance. And I think that would really be a great prairie moment, if like on Lawrence Welk, if everybody just got out there.
Maybe they'll do it again afterward.
I want to take the opportunity to, I'm trying to decide if I should say request, invite, or implore. Those of you who are prairie members and close friends who are willing to please fill out what Mary has in hand, something that went out on the email on the 16th of this month, and I assume that most people who saw this said, oh yeah, I should do that, and then it stayed on your email list. What was sent out to you and what is now on paper is a summary of our strategic planning session 3 from May 31st, and additionally, the set of actions from the second strategic planning session that were approved by the board. What we're requesting of people is that they help us prioritize those actions in light of the outcomes that we've discussed, which are on the summary. If you didn't see any of this, we have about 15 copies of the summary and 20 copies or so of the action sheets. If there aren't enough, I will happily make more. Do this today. Don't take it home. This is what we are asking. If you would look over the, I think it's 17 actions. The last two we're not asking you to prioritize, but of the 17 that are the top on the list, it's pretty clear on there, choose five only five that are your top five, and then rank those from 5 to 1. 5 is the most important. 1 is the least important of your top 5. And what I'm doing is compiling all of that. And at our review session next Sunday after service, we'll be talking about what we as a group have said were our priorities. And we'll also be looking at how we can make decisions about the huge wish list we generated of all the things we'd like to do to this building, how to start sorting that through, and also looking at how we will know when it is time for us to move to a bigger space. So I invite all of you to please come Sunday after service next week. We'll have a potluck. But before that, fill out your priorities today. You may choose instead to send them by email to me. They are on your email, and I just sent them out again this morning saying, please, 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 please. We did. Those of you who were actually at the strategic planning meeting will have already done this. So you don't need to worry about it. If you've already done it, you've already done it.
Right, don't do it again. We don't want double voting.
Questions about that? Okay. Then our final hymn, number 331, Life is the Greatest Gift of All. Please stand.
Thank you.
And thank you, Dolita. Our closing words today are a responsive reading, number 210 in your hymnal. No, can't be 210. What is it really, Mary?
Save it for next week. 610.
Thank you to whoever found that quickly. Where in our hearts is that burning of desire? Whence comes that drive in us?
We look to the starry sky and love storms in our hearts.
Whence comes that storm?
The journey of love is a very long journey.
But sometimes, with a sigh, you can cross that vast desert.
Search and search again without losing hope.
You may find sometime a treasure on your way. Thank you very much for coming today. Please greet your neighbor and consider joining us for Indy's birthday party. Thank you.